You'll have had them, I'm sure. Moments of insight, intuition. A sudden dropping of the penny, seeing of the light, lifting of the mist. And there, you can see it now. See what others have been telling you about, but has hitherto seemed to pass you by. But now you have it. Or it has you. We can be rolling along fine, thinking we've got life all figured out. We buy a newspaper that echoes and reinforces our world view. We know who fits in where, what is as it should be. And the corners of our thinking are rounded, the edges softened, we're there. And then something happens to make us look at things again. And we're unsettled, we're shaken and stirred, and pretty uncomfortable about things. And we discover that the neat little box we've put life into isn't sufficient, lacks flexibility. We have to review our stance on this, that, or the other matter. And suddenly, it's not just as simple and straightforward as we imagined. Now, usually these seismic shifts in our thinking have to do with people and our experiences with them. The parents of traditional moral principle whose daughter comes home and tells them that she's moving in with her boyfriend. The couple with strong views about homosexuality whose son tells them he's gay. The man who's always been critical of the health service, who finds himself in hospital, overwhelmed by kindliness and skill. And the examples could go on. The man who had no time for what he saw as the feckless unemployed is made redundant and can't, for the life of him, get a job. The church elder who would never have a woman minister finds himself with one, and she's great. The man who grumbles about all the political correctness and makes such a fuss about disabled people and their rights, who finds he now has to push his wife around in a wheelchair, and suddenly he sees the world differently. And so on. Time for a rethink. All our hard certainties rocked by reality. And we have to think again, look at things afresh, reassess our dogmatic stance. We can cling on to our stubborn certainties and or learn to respond as situations arise, as real people enter the equation. The choice is ours. To hold to the stubborn certainties or to respond to reality. And it's often to do with people and the awfulness of their plight, the severity of their need, the depth of their crisis, the hard choices they've got to make. And we begin to think that sometimes, actually, it's people first and principle second. People first, principle second. Now, that can be a risky road to take. Who knows what accommodations, adjustments, waterings down, and radical reviews it will demand. But when the person is actually there in front of you, and their need cries out, their humanity presents itself, we know instinctively where our priorities lie. Theory might be one thing. Theory might be well and good, but often it has to go out of the window when we're dealing with real people. Intellectual arguments are one thing. The needs of real individuals for compassion, grace and tenderness are another. So here's the question. Did Jesus ever change his mind about things? Did his thinking evolve, develop, change, alter in the light of circumstances? Did he ever learn anything? Have one of those moments when all his certainties had to be readjusted in the light of the need of a real person there in front of him. The creeds of the church from the earliest times talk about Jesus as being human and divine. And that's not an easy concept. It's always left tough questions for us. But the early church fathers, after much study and many councils, decided it was the truth revealed in the biblical texts and in the remembrance of the Christian community. So does that mean he knew everything all the time, in the light of his being God and all? Or did he have to learn stuff, same as we did, so that his being divine gave him no special advantages? He had to learn to read and write. He had to come to an understanding about truth and morality, and what's right and what's wrong. He had to learn to be a carpenter, just like any apprentice, and get scales in his fingers and rough bits in his hands. And he had to deal with his cultural heritage and the straitjacket that can be. The certainty among his people that they were the people, that they were so chosen at heart, and that everyone else was pretty much not worth very much. And having breathed the air of prejudice and social arrogance from his early days, did he have to learn new thinking, discover new attitudes, different ways of dealing with the world? And when and where did those tipping points come? Well, I think we read about one today in Mark 7. In truth, the incident with the foreign woman is pretty shocking. Jesus seems to give her short shrift. He has other bigger fish to fry. His mission to the people of Israel has his full attention and his full commitment, and there's nothing left for the desperate woman with her need and her crisis. Because she's not a Jew, she counts for less. She's not a priority. He has other things on his mind, simple, as it should be, according to the measures and the manners of his time and the common thinking of his people. But his words to her sound rough, harsh, ungracious, impatient, shocking, unchristlike. He had work in hand, and the people of his own culture and their blindness, their tragedy, is what summons him, with all his resources, energy and compassion, and he seems to have nothing left for those on the fringes, on the edges, beyond the reach of his compassion. He tells her to go away. He sends her away. But she won't go. She won't take a telling. Her persistence is relentless. And then it seems to happen. The moment comes. The penny drops. He sees it. He sees her as a person with a desperate problem and an immediate need. And it all falls into place. Compassion overcomes cultural stereotyping. Compassion overcomes cultural stereotyping. All prejudices are pushed to one side by an overwhelming humanity and love. And he sees, he understands, and is liberated by that moment, that insight, that divine revelation. Liberated to love the whole world, to leave no one outside the scope and compass of his compassion. Now he is gripped by the need of the whole world and draws that whole world to his heart. The American theologian Barbara Brown Taylor describes it this way. She says, you can almost hear the huge wheels of history turning as Jesus comes to a new understanding of who he is and what he's been called to. He is no longer a Messiah called only to the lost sheep of Israel, but God's chosen Redeemer of the whole world, Jews and Gentiles alike, beginning now with this Canaanite woman. In that other famous story of the woman taken in adultery, whom the law said should be stoned, that offers another one of those disclosure moments. When the light dawns and Jesus learns that people are more important than rigid legalistic attitudes, and he invites, he dares his critics to share that moment of understanding. I know the law says this, but here in front of me is this trembling, terrified woman. What matters most? You tell me. What matters most? What does God the Father want me to allow to happen most? And yes, who knows what murky moral waters this decision will lead to, and how complex it will all become. But the truth is, people matter, mercy matters, grace is for all God's children. The good news is for all the world. And if there are blurred edges, we will live with them, deal with them. And on another occasion, when his disciples offend against the strict Sabbath regulations that have become just silly in their rigidity, another moment of clarity. Of course, this is the truth. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Yes, that's the right emphasis. This is what matters. We all carry stuff around with us. Simplistic assessments, ancient prejudices, caricatures of this type of person or that. And we should bless those disclosure moments when we learn something new about truth. Its capacity to unsettle. Its sometimes grey areas. Its challenge to our comfortable certainties. If we are truly blessed, we will have our moments of discovery and insight, tipping points when the clouds of ignorance part and the sunlight of truth illuminates our story. And if that opens us or our message up to the charge of us being a soft touch, offering cheap grace, well, we will live with that rebuke and try to explain that grace isn't cheap, even though it's free. A kindly spirit is not easy, just right. And we will allow ourselves to be open to those disclosure moments when the love of God enables us to see things differently in the midst of real encounters, not wham-bam, rockets galore, revelations, but the quiet new certainties that creep into our soul, and we discover that people matter more than us being right all the time. There was a man in the early years of my ministry who gave me a torrid time. He could be difficult, negative. You say black, he'd say white. His mission seemed to be to block and stymie and make sure I never got what I wanted for the church without a struggle. He was a pain in the neck. Well, he got ill. I visited him in hospital and he lay there, scared, sick and vulnerable. And as I looked at him, I realised that actually I loved him. I loved the old beggar. And all that other stuff was nothing. He mattered. He mattered to me. It was a revelation indeed. I'm still waiting for the other moments to come when I can open the door to a needy individual who's looking for money or something and feel only compassion and never cynicism and suspicion. Or when I'm able to see a beggar in the streets of Geneva or Paris and not be torn between helplessness, anger, shame, and feel only instead genuine sorrow and true compassion. I'd like to get to that point. I take some comfort from the fact that if there were things the Master had to learn, journeys and adventures of discovery he had to make, that he will understand it was taking me a while to get myself to where he would like me to be, where I too will know that when it all boils down to it, when it all boils down to it, people, whoever they are, strong or weak, feckless or confident, gay or straight, rich or poor, fat or thin, nice or nasty, Christian or non-Christian, they are our gift, our responsibility, and our blessing. They matter, every single one of them. Whoever they are, they matter.